Craig Hoffman.
I do not like Aaron Rodgers. I almost felt like I was about to go into like a Dr. Seuss rhyme there.
The Hoffman Show.
I do not like Aaron Rodgers very much. I do not care that he has a good football touch.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hour number two of the Hoffman Show on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube. We got a fun chat going there if you want to check us out on video at the Team 980. It is a Monday. It is 5 o'clock. That means it is time for Not My Beat. And it is time for Michael Phillips, everybody.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Of course, Michael Phillips from our sister station, our Odyssey family, 910 The Fan, down in Richmond. You can hear him 10 a.m. to noon. If you're in the D.C. area or anywhere outside of the Richmond area, you can listen on the free Odyssey app. Michael, I have never hosted a radio show where I take calls after a loss of people apologizing to the general manager. How'd your show go today?
I love it. It's a building process. There's a ways to go. We didn't, you know, we do the Misery Monday branding. I said, I don't feel like it's a Misery Monday. Now I will tell you, up there in the press box in Baltimore, I was sat between Chris Russell and Grant Paulson. So I feel like I had a lot of conviviality there that may have influenced my thoughts on the game, but I wasn't bummed out for most of the game.
Yeah, no, I wasn't either. I mean, I was like, to the extent, I was actually, I would say, Michael, more bummed out during the game because you're just going, damn it, Baltimore's really good. I don't think they're going to beat them because Baltimore just can get what they want offensively. Lamar, Henry, like Monken was in his bag. Turns out some of that was actually Lamar audibling at the line of scrimmage. Logan told me that from his view on the sideline. Like, he could tell that Lamar, you know, whether it's Monken sending him to the line with two plays or Lamar just having the entire playbook, like, he was able to really operate at a high level. But all in all, like, Washington came back, and I think if they can get the stop at the end, which didn't feel like they were going to do, but if they somehow found a way to get the stop at the end, like, I feel like Jaden could have certainly driven them down and tied that thing up. And I think that's why people today are kind of like, yeah, they lost, but like, it wasn't like Miami last year. It wasn't like all these other times they've been blown out. And I think that maybe even more so in this loss than some of the other wins, people understand the project a little bit better than, again, even the four-game winning streak that preceded yesterday's game.
Oh, and people would trade results this season for a franchise quarterback in a heartbeat, and it sure feels like that's what we're doing here. You nailed it. I mean, every time number five came out there and they had to have it, he got it. You know, when they went down 14, it's okay, they're on the ropes. They need a score here. He got one. You know, oh, man, the game's slipping away. Oh, he's there right before halftime. I just want to zoom in on that, Craig. That's my favorite possession of the whole game. Dan Quinn gets aggressive with the timeouts. While Baltimore still got the ball and the score isn't even imminent yet, he knows what he wants to do and he knows what's coming. He gets Jaden the ball with some time left. And I know no points were created from that drive, but I'm focused on the process, not the result. The process was so good. Jaden knew exactly what to do, exactly where to get them, exactly when to clock the ball. That was as close to, oh my gosh, we've got something, as I've seen in any of these games, the wins included.
Michael Phillips, 910 The Fan, down in Richmond with us here on The Hoffman Show. Anything else that really stood out to you about how these teams competed yesterday from being at the game? Something that you noticed, whether it's a physicality, whether it's some of the communication stuff, anything in particular that you're like, I definitely noticed this because I was here, and as you're driving back to Richmond last night, that you were thinking about positively or negatively for Washington?
Yeah, you'll notice it on the film, but they were stacking the box. They made the conscious choice defensively. We're going against the run, and we're going to see what happens with the pass. And we saw what happened with the pass, and they were particularly vulnerable, I felt, on the play action, you know, where they're going in on the run. I just didn't have anybody back on the pass. I thought it was a great atmosphere. It was a fun day for a game, fun crowd for a game. Both sides going hard, and certainly in the locker room after, there weren't a lot of guys saying, oh my gosh, you know, we lost, this is terrible. There was still a lot of confidence, and you know, felt more like a baseball clubhouse after a loss, right? There's 162 of them. You can't go too hard, high or low in baseball. It kind of felt like that. Like, hey, that was a game. That was another step forward for this team. I will say my concern coming out of it has nothing to do with what I saw on the field. It's these defensive line injuries. That was a lot of them for one game, and they don't have depth. They just don't at this stage. There's no addition by subtraction. It's subtraction by subtraction at this point, and I fear that's what we're about to do.
So we'll circle back to those in a second, but I want to follow up on the locker room atmosphere. Are you saying that is a good thing, that they treated it more one of 162, baseball style, like, okay, we're not going to get too bummed out about this? Or is that worrying at all? Or is it like, and I guess the question really is, how does that compare to all the many other losses that you've covered in your illustrious Washington football reporting career?
Yeah, so when you win, there's music. So that's like the distinguishing factor there. When you win, there's music, guys are upbeat, everybody feels good. When you lose, generally, there's silence. Everybody just handles their business, shuffles along, gets out of there, knows they didn't do the job they came there to do. There wasn't music yesterday, but there was chatter. Guys weren't hanging their heads. And, a lot of times when you do an interview and you hear in the interviews from the losing locker room, it's the guys talking in the real hushed tone, Craig, because they don't, they don't want to make waves, and everybody's being real quiet in there. Everybody was conducting business at a regular volume. Dan Quinn's message to the team after the game was, you did some good things today, you did some things we're going to clean up, this team remains on the right trajectory. And I think that's accurate. I think that's true.
I do as well, and I also commend you. Doing tricks like this is very easy with an actual microphone. To do it with a cell phone, Michael. You're turning into one of us. You're a real radio person now. You're not just a writer trying to do radio. Michael, that was your graduation. Congratulations, Michael Phillips, everybody.
Today is the day he became president.
Just wait for the if you know, you know, let it hit everybody, and quickly move on. Okay, Jonathan Allen, out for the season. Let's start with the here and now, and then I'm going to ask you the sports talk radio, has he played his last snap? So you can have that ruminating in the back of your head. Last snap in Washington, ruminating in the back of your head. But for the here and now, how big of a loss is John Allen? What do they try to do to replace him, and why are you concerned that that won't work, besides the obvious that Jonathan Allen is awesome?
That's very well put. His Jonathan Allen-ness is going to be very hard to replace by guys not named John Allen. If there's a position where you can have hope on the depth, it is this one. Fedarian Mathis, I think, has outplayed my expectations this year. I want to phrase that very carefully. He's not John Allen, but he has given them some really good snaps this year. All right, so that's good. Johnny Newton, obviously, they're pinning a lot of hope for him on the future. The future is now, to borrow a cliche, and he's got to step up and be ready to go. There's probably enough there to sustain a rotation if you can get consistent production out of Mathis and ramp up his snaps. I think that's one where there's probably enough to go around, while acknowledging exactly what you said. There's only one of that dude.
Right. Like, Newton has been, like, watching that dude on tape is really fun. He plays so hard. But one, can he sustain that when he's got to take on more snaps? And two, what does that do to your depth? I'm also curious to see who they call up, because they had a couple guys like your boy Pollard, the kid out of UVA, right? Do I have the right guy? Narelle Pollard? Sound familiar?
You might. I've been out of the UVA game for a minute. Alameda Zacchaeus is my UVA guy. You may have just caught me off guard with a Wahoo poll, and I'm just embarrassed.
That, or he went to Virginia Tech, and now the entire Commonwealth.
UVA fans are mad. You misidentified him. The Virginia Tech fans are mad we missed him.
He went to Tech. God dang it. I apologize to all the UVA fans and all the Virginia Tech fans. I apologize to the entire Commonwealth of Virginia. I do know at least I'm supposed to call it a Commonwealth because I used to live there. I very much like your state/Commonwealth, and I promise to never do it again. I do know that Narelle Pollard led all of Division I in pressure rate for defensive tackles last year. And so, like, Is he the guy? See, I brought us back, Michael. Like, so there's, they've got some interesting potential guys. Obviously, they just brought up Obata, so he can play a little bit inside and in certain spots when they want it. Like, when Allen's mobility is useful, they can play Obata inside. But also, you know, Dorrance Armstrong, huge loss if he's out long term. This is where the fact that this is year one of a rebuild, I think, where they don't have the depth of guys that they would like to have in the long term, Michael, really starts to potentially bite them if these guys are out. We know Allen's out for the year, but if some of these other guys are also unable to go.
Yeah, Armstrong had some really good snaps too, and you know, it accumulates up front there, and not to suggest that, you know, this is going to be a Super Bowl team with them, but you know, that's the sort of thing that could swing some close games. You know, not Carolina. I still think they should handle Carolina, but this Chicago game shaping up to be a lot of fun, right? You know, Caleb Williams is catching his strides, kind of stealing from the Jaden Daniels playbook. They're playing with a lot of tempo. It's going to be a game like this one, a couple of guys kind of playing against the mirror, so to speak, in this game. I think that, you know, when you have those games, the Steelers game, right, where the Steelers defense is so legit, you know, anything you do gets magnified because you're probably going to be playing a 10-7 game. Those are the games where these absences really start to matter. You just hope it won't mean the difference between 8-9 playoffs and not playoffs, or 9-2, wherever that line is. You just hope it doesn't mean you're on the wrong side of it when they tally them up.
Okay, now time for the big sports talk radio question of the day. John Allen out for the season. We know what his contract situation is. If you don't know, I'll fill you in so that you can join the we. He's got no guaranteed money left. He's got one more year, which they can move on. They can just say, like, hey, you're cut before the start of the league year. Jonathan Allen is then a free agent. There's no dead cap money for the Washington Commanders. Has Jonathan Allen, for any number of reasons, played his final snap as a Washington Commander, Michael Phillips?
This actually, you know, if you had asked me this question Saturday morning, I would have said, yes, he's gone after this year somehow. Whatever that method is, this will be his last year in Washington. I would have felt pretty confident with that statement. In a lot of ways, this muddies the waters more than it would have if he hadn't. If he had played the whole season, had, you know, John Allen number season, he wouldn't have wanted to play on that last year. They would have liked that there's value. They got to control where he goes. They could have orchestrated a trade. I think it would have, the path was clear for him to roll on out. The question is, does the market have more money for John Allen than that last year of his contract has, which I believe is 17? Do I have that correct?
I will double check that number.
Double check while I keep talking, but I believe 17 is the number in his last year. Is the market want to pay him more than that, right? So that prompts a trade. Does the team feel he's worth less than that, which would prompt a cut, which would prompt them to move on? At the risk of giving the most lukewarm take, I think that may actually be the number next year. He may think, I want to play one more, drive my value up going into free agency. The team may think, we'll ride one more run with that. He has a lot to offer. I think the chances that he hasn't played his last snap here actually went up with this injury.
That's fascinating. That's an interesting thought, because I do think it was going to become clearer as the season went, because he was starting to play better. And that I totally agree with. And the number, so his cap hit is 23 next year. His base is 15.5. So if they cut him after, use the little snip right there, pre-release 6-1, save about $9 million. Oh, sorry, nope, that's the wrong one. We want 2025. We want the 2025 scissors icon on SpoTrack, which is currently not working. So
yeah, and you know, there's the roster bonuses and all that. So 17 is probably about the cash number in the end. The beauty of this isn't a team that has to worry about cap space. They may not even spread it over 2 years. They may accelerate the whole hit if they cut him, if that's the direction they go, because they can absorb it this year. You know, all these calculations are, Jaden Daniels is on his rookie contract for two more years, right? Right. Obviously, given him an you know, the fifth year and then the extension. Year three is the push your chips in year, which we've historically seen with rookie quarterbacks. So any decision you make is with an eye toward, what does our team look like in year three of Jaden Jaden Daniels, the lowest amount we will ever pay for quality quarterbacking, and the most mature that quality quarterbacking is going to be at the cheap price.
Right. And you're right. 17 is savings, 6 of dead cap, which is the prorated money, but there's no additional dead cap if they cut him. So that's the John Allen number / Michael's John Allen answer. As far as what we saw from the offense yesterday, like, how do you feel about their performance against the best defense that they've faced? 23 points is obviously below the 31 they were averaging. I think there's a lot to like. There's obviously some other stuff that maybe you get concerned about. How did you overall feel about the offensive performance yesterday?
Yeah, Craig, you bring me on for the hottest of hot takes. I understand that. I'm here to deliver. I like this Terry McLaurin kid. I think he's got a future in football. I think he could be all right. I love that Terry's involved so much, and I loved both the touchdown catches. They were both so good on both the throw and the catch. I just think that's so crucial going forward, that chemistry is there, and we've seen more and more of it each week, and we've gone from we're going to force feed him a screen to we're actually drawing things up that really work for both him and Jaden, and the timing and the communication are very, very good. The chemistry is very good. I love seeing that. Up front, I saw a lot of one-on-ones that they lost on the offensive line. I'm not here to cast blame. Ravens have some good players. You know, there were some times where Jaden just didn't have the time to do what the play called for him to do, and I think that led to a couple of the early things. I was surprised they didn't try to establish the run a little more. I'm aware that B-Rob wasn't there, but I think very highly of Eckler, and I think highly of Kingsbury's ability to scheme this thing up. I'm a little surprised they didn't go harder on that earlier. I don't know that it would have made a difference, but I think that what you saw on the whole was an offense that got exposed to adversity for the first time, that was playing from behind for the first time, and I didn't see any inclination that it impacted number 5. He remained cool. He remained fully in command the whole time. That's my big takeaway, and it's a positive.
No, I agree with that. So the thing that I'd be curious to talk to Cliff about, and I'm sure he'll get asked a version of this on Thursday, is did the choices around running the football and your lack of success running the football have more to do with Brian Robinson or his absence or the Ravens defense? Because both those things can influence your decision making, and depending on which one is which, you know, maybe you find other ways, like you run McNichols on some of the stuff you like with Robinson. If you think that you can get Baltimore, if you think Baltimore is not gettable, then it's like, well, what's the point of ramming our head into the wall? I'm curious what you think of why Washington struggled to run the football so much yesterday, and how you think that influenced Cliff's decision to call more pass plays.
Yeah, my gut is it was B-Rob related. I think that they, I think it did account for the fact that their starting running back wasn't in the lineup, and not that they don't trust Eckler, they very clearly do, but it looks like Cliff thinks the best way to get Eckler the ball is through a screen pass in space on the toss, kind of, you know, a little bit different than the traditional handoff and go and move the pile. That was my gut. I'd be curious what your read on it was, because I think it was B-Rob driven to a decent extent.
I think it's sometimes hard to separate the two. I don't think that they had any kind of run schemes that they felt really good about. There was a couple, they got like some 4, some 6-yard carries, some things that would be considered successful runs. But they're also some stuff that I think they've liked and excelled at this year that Baltimore just ate up. And I feel like if you're Cliff and you feel like every run call is a guess, and you feel better about just calling something in quick game or whatever, I'd probably just do the whatever. And I think that probably enters into his mind yesterday, is Jaden's still performing well, that I don't know that we can run on these guys. And at that point, like, why waste downs more than we have to?
Yeah, it's true that, you know, Jaden was the primary stick that was stirring the offense, so to speak, yesterday, and it certainly, they didn't put too much on him. There was one designed run early. I don't love the designed runs on early downs. That, to me, save those for when it matters. But you do it early to set up concepts late, and so I can't get too mad about
sure.
It because they've had so much success this year so far doing it. Loved seeing Zach Ertz get some action. McCaffrey got a little action. It was nice to hear a lot of different names and numbers called, which tells me that they're still scheming up and they're still operating at a high level in terms of what they're doing offensively. There's no plateau there, at least that I can see so far.
For sure. And I think the one other thing they would have probably liked to do more yesterday was get a little bit more vertical down the field. They never could kind of stretch the field with any super deep shots. They threw one or two, you know, the one to Terry that he threw out of bounds against a blitz, which is like, good, you give up a 50, you throw up a 50-50 ball because that's the only thing you can do in that situation. And the fact they take those shots, I like, but it means the linebackers can creep up and like you kind of can stay in the box. Your safeties aren't nearly as far back. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into it in terms of the setup there. Last thing for Michael Phillips, super big picture here, Michael, as we wrap up. Of course, you can check MP on the mic 10 a.m. to noon on 910 The Fan in Richmond on the free Odyssey app. Does the fact that they went toe-to-toe with Baltimore, albeit they lost, but they go toe-to-toe, they're now 4-2, Dallas gets wrecked, Philly looks like a mess, the Giants are the Giantsing. If you're Adam Peters, do you look at the trade deadline any differently?
I agree with the first half of your take, which is the NFC East is ripe for the picking this year. And these guys match up well against the Cowboys, too. And the Eagles, that's all in their heads, so that'll take care of itself. I agree the NFC East is there to be won. It's funny because the past colors the future so much around here. I just can't shake Ron Rivera's first team winning the NFC East, which I think was a net negative for everybody involved long term. That Ron thought he had it rolling. He didn't. He made some roster decisions as a result that I think he probably regrets. The fan base thought they were further along than they were. Not to suggest this is exactly the same, because this isn't exactly the same. It's actually quite different. But I think that Adam Peters' tasking is to look at this as a five-year project, to look at this as building towards that year three of Jaden Daniels and then building a sustainable winner off of that. If I were making the call from Josh Harris's office to Adam Peters, my instructions would be, don't change your approach. Don't watch the standings. Don't watch the scoreboard. This isn't a Super Bowl team. This isn't the team that's going to win it all. Don't do something you'll regret later because you're excited right now in this moment.
I think that's good advice. I would tell him, like, stay diligent. Don't be afraid to do something if you like it. But don't do anything crazy, which is, by the way, like Josh Harris, investor mind, like that is, I think, kind of how he thinks anyway about this. So, you know, when Josh Harris gets involved, it's asking good questions to make Adam Peters think like that, which I think is why he's been a relatively good owner across multiple sports. Michael Phillips, 910 The Fan in Richmond. Also listen on 105.1 FM and, of course, on the free Odyssey app. Michael, always a pleasure, sir. See you Sunday, or are you gonna pull another wacky bit and wind up in this studio?
I think it's a couch day on Sunday.
You're not enticed by the Carolina Panthers?
I'm going to be there for Chicago, though. My hot take of the weekend is I think they're going to move that Bears game to 425. I think Tony Romo is going to circle back around, spend some more time with the fellas.
Michael, if they want to do that and they do not move this, I don't care. Do it now. Do it today. Move this Carolina game to 1 o'clock. What are we doing? Why is this game at 4:25? Why do I need to be at Northwest Stadium until 9 o'clock at night? And why does John Kime need to be there till 1 a.m.? I think that's a question for John. But you know, the point stands.
It's a full wacky. It makes no sense at all.
I guess it was going to be Bryce Young versus Jaden. That was the thought.
No, because it's not 4:25. It's not the national TV slot. It was never. I don't think TV had any hand in this. That's
so
why I'm confused.
Weird. Because, by the way, do you know there's only 3 games in the 4 o'clock window this Sunday?
Yeah, but this one was never a serious candidate to be flexed. They've got a good marquee game on Sunday. You know, sometimes they play, like that opener against Tampa was 4:25 because it gets freaking hot in Tampa in September. Like that made sense. Like you don't want the guys out there, you don't want the fans out there in the heat at 1 o'clock. I can't come up with the reason on this one.
To annoy me, and it's working. Thanks, Roger. Really appreciate it. All right, Mike will be watching from his couch, but we'll talk to him on Monday anyway. Michael,
all right, later,
thank you,
dude.
Sir. That's Michael Phillips with us here on the Hoffman Show. When we get back, speaking of the rest of the NFL, we'll go around it. Analysis from each and every game of the NFL weekend next.